Well, I'm glad to actually see that there are few people actually interested in the environment, and this is a topic that we're going to discuss today. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Corporate social responsibility within shipping, CSR as it's known, is growing more important every day. Megatrends for the future, including transparency, carbon regulation, and resource constraints, will all impact the industry. But being proactive now can have many short as well as long-term benefits and ensure that your company remains competitive and secure investment. With all eyes on us to act now against climate change, more and more ship owners are taking a long-term view and building sustainability into their businesses to stay safeguard for the future. CSR is no longer an empty phrase used to boost PR campaigns and keep shareholders happy that the box has been ticked. It is fast becoming a deal maker or breaker. Literally, for investors and financial institutions, insurers, charterers, and the rest of the supply chain. EEDI, SEMP, EOI are just the tip of the iceberg. More regulation is coming. Shipping is under renewed pressure at the moment from the EU to adopt further regulation, potentially market-based measures. Just this month, the EU has called for a full report to analyze how putting a price on greenhouse gases, GHGs, from shipping and aviation will shape the Green Climate Fund. But while this is clearly a key factor, it should not be the only motivator in adopting a sustainability strategy and becoming more energy efficient. Much of this is driven by consumers, which we will comment to later. But what is clear is that sustainability must become an integrated part of your business strategy, and for good reason, aside from stakeholders' relations, there are real cost savings, and be had as a direct result of becoming more energy efficient. In the current market, this is crucial for maintaining a competitive advantage and preparing now for the future. In commercial terms, energy efficiency can be directly linked to fuel consumption. A simple but hard-hitting equation. Carbon emission reductions equals fuel cost savings. Energy efficiency does equate to lower fuel costs. And from a commercial perspective, there is no doubt that the better you manage emissions now, the greater competitive advantage you will achieve in the future. This cannot come at a more relevant time for shipping, assisting in securing clients that have a focus on sustainability, lowering fuel bills, and attracting key stakeholders. Support from investors, banks, charterers makes sustainability more commercial linked than ever. We are aware that the commercial argument is very powerful, but we also recognize that for many ship owners, there is much confusion in the market around carbon management, and that needs to be addressing. Education is needed, and given the challenges of daily operations, carbon management requires expert counsel. After all, this is a specialist area that is critical to business performance and should be viewed as risk management. Consumers. Consumers are demanding transparency around carbon emissions, and they are increasingly making purchasing decisions based on sustainability. In turn, this is why investors are auditing sustainability of shippers and incorporating this into their funding criteria. As the foundation of global trade, shipping is therefore at the heart of the supply chain for the consumer, and so needs to consider its reputation on a global, consumer-facing level. Major customers, such as retailers like Tesco, Walmart, are driving sustainability with their own sector, but this crosses over to logistics and shipping. On a maritime level, charterers are also favoring energy-efficient vessels, in line with regulations such as EEDI and SEMP. No one wants an old vessel. We are likely to see this trend grow and grow as more new builds come online and shipyards look to compete to create the most efficient designs. This is critical time for shaping image and is vital to demonstrate to customers, stakeholders throughout the supply chain and investors that you are acting to manage environmental risk. Some examples of shipping companies that are leading the change for the sustainable shipping is coming up. Maersk. Launched in 2010, to much fanfare in the press, Maersk Sustainability Progress Report was the company's first move towards true transparency in its carbon emissions. As one of the world's largest shipping groups, Maersk aimed to provide transparency and engage with stakeholders on sustainability. The company investment in new builds, energy-efficient vessels, is possibly one of the most visible ways that they are becoming more energy-efficient, but ultimately Maersk is aiming to integrate sustainability into everything they do. The group views as a business approach is the report states basically that business interests are inseparable for sustainable development and that measuring, managing and reporting on progress promotes accountability. This total integration led to an award for CSR strategy in October 2011. Confirmation, if any, was needed that financial institutions highly value sustainability efforts. Maersk has been open about its targets, setting a long-term vision for sustainable business out with shorter-term KPIs, making sure that the industry knows it is working towards them. WW Group. Its aim is to reduce the impact of its cargo carrying operations. Its vision is to continuously improve operations and reach zero emissions, a process that has already begun. In 2009, WW's goal was to reduce CO2 emission measures in tons by 4% from 2008 levels, in line with the reduction in bunker consumption. It achieved CO2 emission reductions of 20% in total. Due to the recession, less cargo was transported and the tons on emissions went up by 25%. WW is actively engaged in developing new carbon indexes for the industry and worked with IMO on EDI and EOI. The goal is to cut greenhouse gases by 32% over the last 12 months. Norwegian Cruise Line. Everyone knows that cruise lines consume a huge amount of fuel. Norwegian made the move to make carbon offsets available to travelers in response to consumer demand. This is common practice in aviation. Norwegian actions have significant positively reputational benefits for NCL and signals process for the cruise industry. Funds supports the projects being developed by the North American largest renewable energy producers, which is called NextEra Energy. Norwegian has received awards for its environmental best practice, including 2010 Marine Environmental Protection Award from the U.S. Coast Guard. This means they use a core set of standards to continually improve operating efficiency and environmental impact. Another initiative they actually took, it was to ensure a trained environmental officer travels on every ship to oversee and verify seaboard environmental compliance. That's a nice example. Solstad Offshore. With a fleet of 51 offshore vessels, Solstad is making a real impact as a sustainable operator with genuinely green operations that is achieving reductions in emissions and offering offsetting as a standard contract option for the customers. Solstad defines a green operations, fuel-saving operations that reduces vessels' consumption by at least 500 liters per day. Operational initiatives that can deliver this include less speed, anchoring where possible, and using green DP. This places the crew at the heart of achieving emissions reductions, something that Solstad believes has been crucial to success. Its results are amazing. Solstad has annual goals per vessel of 185 SGOs. This will save 185,000 square meters of a rainforest per vessel. The 2011 fleet goal is 7,100 SGOs, and that's translated to 7,100,000 square meters of rainforest saved. What we need to do? We need to take a holistic approach. Taking a phased, proactive approach to CSR should be structured and formalized, and this should be the next logical step for the shipping industry. Setting sustainability high on the agenda and linking it to all your operations demands a standardized and certified process, independently verified by the classes. And as we saw with the Maersk example, being able to measure, monitor, and report your performance opens the doors, not only enabling industry-wide data transparency or carbon emissions, something that will inevitably, if an ETS comes into force, will be the case, but also sets you apart as demonstrating best practice standards and enables benchmarking. Ongoing monitoring and accurate reporting of carbon emissions is the first step on this phased approach, which can be managed by experts. At Carbon Positive, we have worked closely with the industry experts to merge our maritime knowledge of technical and management measures with expertise in compliance and voluntary carbon offsetting, providing the best preparation for shipping as we embark on this journey. As we have seen the importance of structuring your sustainability activity and integrating into your business strategy cannot be underestimated. To prepare for future regulation, as well as market and investor demands, at Carbon Positive we have worked with maritime industry experts to bring our expertise of carbon management and strategy to the shipping industry. The Carbon Positive program for ships enables members to proactively manage carbon emissions and benefit from the positive reputation the CSR brings, whilst preparing for future regulation and ultimately taking advantage of significant commercial benefits, improving fuel efficiency and therefore reducing fuel spend. There are many benefits of implementing a carbon management program driven by experts. For the industry as a whole, the time is now to act on climate change, a time when the world is watching us and further regulation at IMO is being debated as we stand here. But let's not wait for this. Action now. We can set apart as a front runner in sustainability and bring ourselves commercial rewards. To do this, we understand that you will need to see how the different technical and operational measures can work for your vessel or fleet. And so we use in-depth scientific and technological research to provide full feasibility studies to ensure that the options you choose are the right for you. We're constantly updating these measures and we're trying to follow the standards like ISO. The holistic approach that we have mentioned spans three key phases, which should be at the heart of your emissions reduction activity. It's measure, reduce, and offset. The old analogy that you can't start a diet without first knowing how much you weigh has never been much more true than now. Measure is the first phase essential to ensure not only that you are aware of each vessel and your company's carbon footprint, but also play a part in defining and shipping industry's true carbon emissions figure as a whole. Ensuring transparency is crucial for successful and meaningful emissions reductions in the future, and particularly if an ETS emission trading scheme comes into force, this will incur costs that need to be addressed. Secondly, the reduced phase encompasses the creation of vessel-specific SAMP, and a selection of technical and operational measures to generate carbon emission reductions based on targets agreed from you and with us. Once emissions has been reduced, offsetting becomes an option. Reductions generate carbon credits that can be used to contribute towards voluntary projects like Solstad example, has incorporated into its business. We realize that this is a very new area for shipping, but our expertise in this area combined with our knowledge of the shipping industry makes this a workable and viable option for the industry. At the end of each phase, you will see that we offer certificates, and we will see why those are so important. So celebrating emissions reduction success is ultimately a key element of the process of our program. As we have seen, being able to demonstrate to potential investors and charters and stakeholders the practical achievements of your carbon management program and delivering tangible results as part of a broader business-led CSR approach is very valuable. With this in mind, Carbon Positive ensures that certificates are verified and certified to ISO standards. The certificates can be used as a proof of compliance with regulations including EDI, SEMP, and as the program develops in line with future regulation, all other standards will be included. As well as providing a certificate that your company can be proud of that can help to secure stakeholder support, on an industry-wide level, it's crucial that shipping embraces verified certificates to recognize benchmark carbon emission reduction. The breadth of our services serves to highlight the very real need for shipping to embrace energy efficiency, as we said, on both competitive and investment levels. The justification is simple. To be successful in business, you must be sustainable. Shipping has long been waiting for defining regulations and a direction to move forward on sustainability, but the ongoing discussions at IMO and EU level signal that the world is waking up to shipping's impact and watching for us to act in line with other major transportation sectors. If we are to make our own path to energy efficiency that works for our own very unique industry, we must all act and work to support ship owners in becoming energy efficient as part of a phased, verified approach that measures and monitors carbon emissions to create benchmarks and standards that can be proud of. And this is where my speech is finished. Thank you very much. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to take it later after Apostolis' presentation. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'll try to follow on from Eleanor's presentation and try somehow to blend mine as well so that we're not duplicating anything. Very similar topics. What I really wanted to cover is essentially looking at the whole energy management and environmental equation to see how they link together, how sometimes they come into conflict, and then most importantly, fitting into the whole theme of the conference today, what it means for future investments. So some thoughts, open up for debate, and hopefully we'll get some questions at the end. Just this slide, just painting the picture, I think you saw this morning, we saw quite a bit about the markets, the volatility, a lot of the negative aspects related to how most of the freight rates are pretty low at the moment in most markets. Also looking at the supply side, so the curve of the new buildings and how that's obviously still a lot to be delivered into the existing fleet. But then how does that fit into the whole profile of shipping, looking at the environmental impacts that come from the effect of shipping? A few mega trends, and this slide is coming from the Sustainable Shipping Initiative, the work that they put together. Essentially, what we see is the fundamentals around the world economy are remaining. We saw this morning that the emerging markets are still growing, albeit at a slower pace. However, there are concerns, and there are concerns around what happens post the crisis in terms of the globalization. Are we going to see that continuing? Are we going to see more protectionism, more perhaps local regional trade? And what does that mean for shipping? How will shipping be affected? Will there be new trade patterns emerging? Looking at the image, of course, transparency is a must, and I think more and more we're seeing that in all dealings, whether we're private, whether we're public companies, we're in the public eye, and everything within seconds is transmitted. With this immediate use of social media, use of the internet, that's something which we have to live with, and we need to make sure that we are disclosing everything which is related to the operations. What is going to be the energy mix of the future? That's a big question mark. What are going to be the timelines? Again, we saw some figures this morning which indicate perhaps some of the direction, part of the direction that we may be taking. But I think at the end of the day, we need to weigh up all the options and see what is the best for the particular trade or a particular strategy that each company has. Definitely, there is increasing need for standards of quality, for safety, for sustainability in general for shipping, and that's coming from all parts and all stakeholders of the industry. When you're looking at technology, I would say a constant reinvention of our companies is necessary. I think that's crucial for today's and for tomorrow's companies, for survival, and how we can look at the advances in technology and see how we can get the return on investment if we decide to make use of those technological options. And finally, all companies, I would say, need to have within their strategies a clear element of the adaptation necessary looking at the climate change. So moving on from that, understanding that the world around us is changing at a much faster pace. The challenges that we have is, of course, an increased demand looking at how efficient we can use the energy for our operations. The increasing widening use of new technology. Changing designs, so looking at what new designs are coming out, particularly looking at some of the more immediate environmental challenges around ballast water treatment. And the costs involved for that, because that's, again, something which has come under a lot of debate. And again, looking at the cost return over a particular life cycle of the vessel. Something that we touched upon in the morning around the recycling, and I think it's important that looking at the new, perhaps, generation of designs, that they should be designed for recycling. So looking at the whole life cycle, and that will make the end of the ship's life much easier to manage. So we don't have the issues that we're facing today where we don't actually know what materials are on board. Of course, it's a reality that we're facing now that the second-hand values of ships, of assets, are on down. And, okay, that's part of the cycle that we're in. And, of course, that has to be built in to the strategies of companies looking at what new investments are going to be coming in terms of the technological challenges as well to meet the new regulations. So the timeline, and looking just particularly on the environmental, and if we take a historical view, first of all, we can see going back to the 80s and the 90s, most of the new environmental legislation that came out was reactive in nature. So it was after a particular accident and was focusing on prevention, was focusing on looking at pollution itself, particularly for water pollution. And then when we're looking at now is a big shift from, say, water pollution to air pollution. And again, what are the impacts for shipping, of shipping on air quality, and then looking at greenhouse gases. And this is becoming a lot more proactive in nature. And this is the timeline, so you can see there's a bombardment almost of new regulations coming in, some more shorter term, some medium to long term. And all of them have significant implications, I would say, for ship operations. We ran a survey about 6 months ago for smart shipping, and I've just taken two questions out from that because I think they fit in very nicely with the whole theme. So first was, what do people demand, what do they expect of regulation and more regulation, as we saw in that timeline? And specifically, can environmental sustainability and profitability go hand in hand? And here you can see from the responses that almost 65% of the respondents thought it would be a combination of either strong regulatory regime or an overhaul of technology. So I think those are two elements that is looking to be part, have to be part of any sustainability equation. We need to have the regulation, we need to have the framework, which should be international in nature, because shipping is truly global. But also we need to have the technology available, readily available, and at the right cost to make the necessary returns. The other question, and the response here I think is somewhat controversial, is what is the how long will people's ships last? So looking at the fleet that we have, and looking, say, at ships delivered in 2006, and this is quite amazing, really, and it could be an indication of the whole reflection of the negative psychology and the mood that people are in the different markets. But this is a cross-section, different geographies, different parts of the industry, and indicating that about 60% of people responded thought that around the 10-year period, they'd be starting to thinking that ships could become obsolete. I don't know if our colleague who's involved in recycling is here, but that's probably good news for him and for anyone who's involved in the scrapping business. But again, it shows, you know, we do have a clear oversupply of ships. The rates are down, a lot of negatives there. And, okay, we're looking at the obsolescence, and how does that link in with perhaps the energy efficiency? And I think this is what I'd like to expand a bit upon in a minute, looking at the future-proofing. But when you look back, say, the mid-2000s and the designs and the whole volume of orders that were placed then, how does the energy efficiency of those designs compare to some of the designs that are coming out now, particularly from Japan and Korea, who've invested quite a lot. Those yards have invested a lot in research, innovation, and development. So looking at future-proofing of ships and just focusing for the moment on energy efficiency and the fuel choice, we get asked all the time, you know, what can we do to future-proof? What can we do to make sure that we can protect our investments, particularly when we know that now it's very difficult to invest because access to finance is so rare. So let's assume we're an owner. We've got a long-term charter fleet made up of bulkers and tankers, typical model for a Greek company. What are the charterer's demands? Carry the right amount of cargo over a specified distance at a certain speed and a certain fuel consumption. So what's going on around us? What's the environment? For sure, costs. Okay, that's big pressure, and it's critical, particularly when you're looking at new ships. Can you get the right price for what you're going to get in terms of that asset? We know that the financing is particularly difficult in this environment, and we know that there is a clear oversupply in most segments, which is resulting in the charter rates dropping. We know that there is going to be increased regulation around the environment, and again, that comes with a cost. And there is increasing public demand for greener shipping. We saw some examples from Elena before. But is that following through to charter rates? My understanding is that it's not at the moment. There isn't that recognition in the market for any investment which is done in new technology, in green designs, to say that this vessel is going to be recognized for that enhancement. But I think energy efficiency, if we're looking at any new design now, is a must. And this is just some examples, and I think it's very, very difficult to illustrate within one slide exactly what is possible and what is theory and what is perhaps more practical. At the moment, we're getting a lot of theory, so we have to be very careful with what is quoted. For particular features, for particular enhancements, or for specific designs. As we know, a lot of these technologies have not yet been proven, but this is some data taken from a study that we did together with DNV for IMO, looking at the potential reductions and focusing on the design features. So this is around the E, the I, which has been adopted by the IMO, and looking at what possible reductions can be achieved in the different timelines and how that fits in with the values which are quoted or defined by IMO. And you can see that there are possibilities there for each different parameter. And of course, when you look at the speed, we understand that EDI is very speed dependent. And you can see here that you know, small change, what is possible there. Moving on to some more details, and this I'm not going to go into a lot of detail now, but it's available. I hope it will be available in the conference papers. But this is just to illustrate that taking different parts, say from the hull, the materials, the coatings, the propeller to hull interface, looking at the propulsion system itself, and then moving into the fuels and the possibilities there, each one of those, or in combination, can provide quite a significant saving when we're looking at EDI values and at the same time fuel consumption. And I think the last one on this I just want to touch upon is the speed. And that's caused a lot of debate because, as I said before, the formula, the way it's come out from IMO, is very speed dependent, and there is the risk that some designs that come out may provide some underpowered ships in the future. Of course, our role, and I think everyone's role as different stakeholders in the industry, is to ensure that that does not happen. So there has to be some slack, something left, some reserve for emergency situations. And of course, when we're looking at the new designs coming through, that's one of the first things that we're checking. When we're looking at the considerations for future-proofing, and again, this is many questions that we get day-to-day, who at the end of the day is going to benefit from this investment? Who is going to benefit from the return? What markets are we operating in? What's going to happen to the charter terms after EDI comes into force in a few years' time? What kind of profile do we have as a company in terms of our financing, in terms of our leverage? Looking at the profile of the ships, age, the types, who do we contract with, what is the counterparty risk, and of course looking at the asset values, second-hand or for new builds, that's a key parameter when we're looking to decide how we can future-proof. And, okay, we don't have all the answers, but there are certainly a number of options. I would say if we're going to be ordering new ships today, and there are some inquiries, I know there is the oversupply, but if we're looking at the new designs, I think it's fundamental that we choose design that has an EDI value, even though it's not compulsory, so that we can compare with the maximum and the minimums that are set for the future. If waivers are offered, because there is a possibility in the regulation to get a waiver, I would say no. Try and avoid that, because again, that could affect the second-hand value of the ships later on in their life. And try to get the best attained EDI through the verification methods, and there are clear guidelines for how EDI will be verified, both desktop, but also after sea trials. And I think another change in all this, I would say, volatile business environment is the need for flexibility. And there, it's important that the right propulsion system is chosen that has that possibility to flux in terms of design speeds and look at the efficiency at the different range of speeds that are specified. I think there needs to be this open discussion with the charter parties, with key customers, to see what actually this means for them. So if we can have the specific design with that fuel consumption, how can this be recognized in the rates? And similarly then, looking at the ships in operation, we have the SEMP, which is the Ship Energy Efficiency Management Plan, mainly looking at the operational and technical issues and initiatives that are on board, and how that can again be recognized, and seeing one ship, how that compares with another. So, now just wrapping up slowly, I would say options for now, so just looking for short-term for the moment, we need to assess the different situations. We know we've got high fuel prices at the moment, particularly for conventional fuel oils. We know that the regulations are coming out. We know the timelines. And we have the possibility, as Elena mentioned, of a market-based measure coming into shipping, whether it's in the form of a levy or a trading mechanism. Nothing's going to change overnight, I would say, but I think for sure the dominance on heavy fuel oil is certainly being questioned. Now, trying to say now what's going to replace that is not easy. There are many options. We may see a variety of responses, whoever we ask, And it's not a straightforward replacement of heavy fuel oil with another fuel. And I would think you can say that there are many competing approaches at the moment, and agendas, of course. So there's a highly political issue here. As we look to the future, as we look to come out of the crisis. But I think there we need to balance the amount of energy that we need to reduce the environmental impact with those financial challenges. We've got some short-term challenges, and I focus mainly on energy, but we have a clear short-term challenge looking at air quality. We're looking at sulfur oxide, nitrogen oxide, and particulate matters. And coupled with that, we've got the more medium to longer term issue of the greenhouse gases. I think for the latter, for greenhouse gases, a change in fuel combined with some of these technical and operational efficiencies that we discussed are probably the only ways that we can actually look at the whole situation and address it properly. Looking more mid to future term, I would say the switch, either looking at distillate fuels or other emission abatement technology like scrubbers, will probably address the SOx and NOx issue. But then when we're looking at the emphasis on compliance and we look at the whole bulge in the order book still being delivered into the market, I would say heavy fuel oil is still going to be the fuel of today and for the medium-term future. If we're looking at beyond 5 years, even further ahead, and it's getting even more difficult to predict with our crystal balls, I would say the future is wide open. In the context of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, the longer-term future for ship propulsion is still to be decided. We know a recurring theme in all these challenges that I've analyzed and the changes in industry, that world trade will have to manage all those complex and increasingly demanding issues. LNG, as an alternative clean fuel, could provide or does provide local air quality benefits and may have wider relevance if CO2 abatement technologies emerge as well. But whatever the industry's approach to greenhouse gases and other environmental issues, I think it's best if we move ahead looking at the facts, analyzing the information that we have, taking advantage of research. A lot of joint industry projects are on the go. We're involved in quite a few across the globe. And we need to continue those efforts. We need to invest in, I would say, research and innovation. And in the meantime, we look at the particular benefits and disadvantages of each particular fuel, looking at LNG, looking at nuclear, looking at biofuels, fuel cells, even wind-assisted propulsion in cases. We look at the coatings, looking at the materials, and, of course, emerging hull designs that are coming out from the main shipyards. But each of those, I think, has to be looked at in a more holistic environmental approach and across a greater integrated supply chain. So it can't be the owner isolated on their own. There's got to be the whole cost-benefit analysis for that supply chain. And by doing that, we firmly believe that a measure or an index of a company's environmental performance, together with the energy efficiency potential and assessment, can and should become a license to operate in the near future. Thank you very much.
Beyond the time, but let's take a couple of questions.
One real quick question, Apostolo. You knocked me off of my seat here. I was thinking green in terms of the environment, and then with one of your forecasts, I began to think green in terms of dollars. You said that the expected life cycle of a ship now will be 10 years. And I did a quick, on the back of the envelope calculation. We have to increase charter rates by $140 a day for every $1 million of ship value. Is that feasible?
As I said at the beginning, I knew it was going to be a controversial slide, but I decided to put it on anyway, expecting to get the question. As I said, this was snap survey done with a range of different respondents across different parts of the industry, owners, operators, managers, and from different geographies. And I think it has to be what works for that particular company. So they will know, you know, when they invested, how they built the ship, what is the performance of that ship, what is the debt on the ship, and then see when is the best time to scrap. I think 10 years, my personal opinion is that it's being very pessimistic. We saw this morning, though, that even a five-year-old ship went to scrap, so obviously they'd done their maths. I'm not an expert on that, so I wouldn't say that I can answer your question fully, and I don't think you expected me to. But certainly take it with a pinch of salt. It's an indication. I think it'd be worthwhile looking into the reasons why do people think that their ships are going to be obsolete in such a short period. But at the end of the day, I think it's just illustrating, and that's what I wanted to show through that slide, that it is on people's minds. You know, how am I going to be trading my ship? Is it going to be profitable, say, in 5, 10 years' time, with the whole parameters that I mentioned earlier? And how is that going to compare with new ships coming through, say, in that period?
Any other question before we move to the next panel? Anybody? Please. Yana Muela, you have a strong voice.
Yeah. Well, as a woman, I will ask Elena. To carry out measuring, verification, and offsetting at the same time. I'm a CSR consultant for 5 years, and I know how the other industries work. But especially in shipping, how can this be carried out and in a way that the shipping company won't be discredited somehow, as happened with Nestlé, that was rated B+, the sustainability report, and finally an NGO rated it as junk. So in that sense, I'm afraid that for whichever private company undertakes that role, except of the classification societies, do they have the human resources? Meaning, classification societies have the surveyors. How can carbon positive carry out a truthful and fair offsetting and all the rest, verification measurement?
I think you have actually mixed many things, Jana, measuring, reducing, and offsetting. First of all, I mean, I have told you that on the measurement side, on the first phase, we actually do an energy audit, and we actually ask our customers to go through an energy audit. So we do have our technical experts that can actually go on board and measure properly the ship. But this is basically for the ship owners to know what is the situation of the ship and how they can actually save some fuel oil. When it comes to measuring, taking, let's say, the IMO EU, let's say, standards, then we provide an online platform, and the ship owner with the technical manager usually actually enters into the online platform all the data they have. We're trying to get even the noon reports, for instance, or to have a daily update data. And this is when the first phase actually finished. When we go to the second phase, which is reduction, we just need basically to agree on the targets. And the targets will be either on the fuel, on savings on CO2 emission reductions, or on fuel saving, or on finance reductions, because everything is translated to finance. We also take some examples from EU, like what happened in aviation, and we run some models there to see how this will actually impact. And then, and then on the third phase, we just give them the option to actually go and do a little bit of offsetting trading in order to understand how the carbon market actually works. When it comes, let's say, to the experts, we are not technical people. We do have our technical experts that have been actually many, many years in this industry, and they know exactly how to do the energy audit. They know exactly how to assess and validate the numbers. And we also have the classes that they actually verified the the classes, that they find the data that we actually enter into our program. And I think that's the important thing. Of course, IMO on a SAMP level and an EOI doesn't actually ask for a verification. However, in our program, we encourage the ship owners to do verification. So we do have a very close cooperation with the classes on the program. I don't know whether that answered your question.